Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back, and I had to go look because I could have sworn that I had voted for CC third, as older mayor, Fillion mayor, but it was actually something very kind of similar. I know why I thought that, because it was Valiance that I voted third. And I did not vote for Midnight Vizu. I voted Monomoy Girl, Serengeti Empress, Valiance, and Valiance is an eclipse horse, and so that's why I kind of associated her with CC with Michael. But it was all right. He's and of course those of you that were listening to I think it was last year that Asmussen roughed me up about. So when you put these things out there, if you don't think that people see them, they do. And what was he mad about? That I didn't. I guess I didn't. Even though I'd voted for Mattoli as sprinter, I don't think I had had him as a horse of the year finalist. That he roughed me up. That made me laugh. Rich Migliore here, joining us. Rich, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Good. I just off the phone with Michael McCarthy, and we kind of celebrated not just Saturday, but his career, and really had a fun conversation. A win, Mig, that was widely hailed for a variety of reasons, I think it was a satisfying result for a lot of people.
Yeah, I felt that way, and I have a friendship with Michael. I mean, we've been friends from back when he was working for Todd, and I'd ride horses for them, and just an easy guy to root for, because you know how deserving he is, how hard he works, and genuinely just what a good person he is. He's one of those people that is always thinking about other people and how things affect them, and he's just a thoughtful guy. And it's funny, like, that horse kind of flew under my radar, but watching the race and then watching it over several times, this is a very deserving winner. He's not the biggest horse, but his stride, his mechanics are really all there. I mean, he gets more ground than a horse his size should get, as far as the length of his stride. He was a very good winner. Yeah, it was impressive.
Give the overview as you watched. I mean, what were your expectations going in? How did you think the race would unfold? What was different about what happened? And then we'll dissect it.
Well, you had to believe Medina Spirit was going to try the same tactics as he did in the Derby. Just reading everything leading up to it, it seemed as though Steve Asmussen was disappointed with the trip. They saw a different trip for Midnight Bourbon in the Derby. And actually I had interviewed Irad the day before he left for Pimlico, and he kind of said that they wanted to be forwardly placed and put him in the game. So you kind of knew they weren't going to give Medina Spirit too much rope, right? They were gonna be on him. And I thought Irad rode a perfect race. He had to apply enough pressure. And I think on any other day, those tactics would have worked. They just hooked a horse that was very, very good on the day. He had skipped the Derby. It turns out it was, all the right thing to do. And, so I think the race ran pretty much. The only thing that was surprising was that Concert Tour basically showed nothing. He has good speed. If you would have told me he'd have been that far off the pace, I would have been surprised. But what was shocking was that he didn't even pull. Like, wasn't as though Mike took him back. Mike just put his hands down, and the horse just did not pick up the bridle. And that was the only surprise of the race. And honestly, like I said, the winner was under my radar. I just didn't really pick up on him. And then after the race, when you start looking a little deeper, you go, you know, okay, this one I should have paid more attention to. And again, watching his stride, and I've watched that race now probably 20 times. He's for real. This is a nice colt. I think he's the horse that just threw his hat in the ring to have a say about who's going to be the best 3-year-old when all the smoke settles.
And there's some things about this that are pretty unique. Jay Privman's going to join us in hour three, and Jay unearthed a fascinating tidbit. You got to, as far as we can tell, go back to the 1880s to find a horse that won the Preakness in their making it their first win on dirt.
Wow, that's interesting. I didn't even realize that. That's a really cool fact. But you know, it's kind of interesting when you start thinking about horses that are efficient on all surfaces. It goes back to their balance. They just have such an incredible balance. So their mechanics are so good that it's not affected by one surface or another, where they're able to replicate their form on whatever. Like, you think about John Henry was not a very big horse, and he was able to run as well on turf, dirt. I mean, I just really think there's something to that. You know, bigger horses tend to not be quite as in balance. You know, just there's more of them that they've got to, you know, all the parts have to fit. A smaller, compact horse, you know, you think like Northern Dancer, you know, horses like that, they just have an impeccable balance to them. And I think that goes so much further than size. Like, when we talk about scope, I think sometimes we get lost in the fact that if a horse is efficient, they're able to go further, they're able to do things easier because their mechanics are so good.
Yeah, exactly. And as a result, you know, they're not wasting energy. They don't have, you know, wasted motion. That, you know, it's one of the reasons that when a horse like Vekoma comes along and everybody's analyzing, you know, the loping, you know, the leg swinging, and you know, the assumption is that, you know, a horse like that will have difficulty staying sound, or, you know, that doesn't have the efficiency of stride, that, you know, it's one more thing to make it harder on a horse. You know, then you fold in riders, it would seem, and I did bring it up, Rich, with Michael just now, somebody like Flavian Pratt, who is very quiet on a horse, and seems to be a perfect pairing too, because he moved him in a really efficient manner and kept him, you know, right where he needed to be, and he was judging, you know, that quick pace up front. He judged it perfectly. It was really a harmony of things that came together on Saturday.
Well, he does something that, you know, I would say vast majority of top riders have in common, is that they allow a horse to continually go forward, not asking them to go forward, not forcing them, but basically getting their position going forward, and then during the running of the race, being able to kind of continually, you know, we see Joel Rosario do it so often, usually from further back, because Joel let one drop to another county. I mean, it's like uncanny how he can produce horses, but how they never inhibit their forward motion. They never stop them. You know, horses are so hard to stop and start. Now, a horse like Rombauer actually is probably easier to, because he's so handy, and you could see that into the first turn. He's in between two horses. He looked, you know, very small between those two horses. He almost got lost a little bit. But he's traveling in the bridle, and he never took a forward step away from him, meaning he never took any momentum. You know, one thing that I when I was riding, I couldn't do well, that some riders can do, is hold a horse up forever, because they would die in my hands. Like, you know, I remember Jose Santos riding the turf, and you know, he'd have a big hold of one and hold him up, and then they'd still find. I didn't have that knack. I couldn't hold one up for 5/8 of a mile and then have them find. They just didn't under me. I can't explain it. You know, Ramon Dominguez, and I think Flavian Prats of this ilk, he could have a hold of a horse and not really steady him along, but, you know, have him in his hands, and then they keep finding underneath him. You know, I think it's just a knack that some riders are better at than others, but all good riders share that one thing in common, that they don't get in the horse's way and impede their forward progress. They just are able to slide in the gaps and find the spots, and there's no, you know, steadying or checking or altering course. I mean, you watch this race, and again, I probably watched it at least 20 times now. He gave this horse as smooth a journey as you can give a horse.
Yeah, and you could see as when he kicked outside, and you know, there was one stride or two where, you know, he sort of was leveling off at the top of the stretch, and it became apparent that he was going to inhale Midnight Bourbon. And you know, when you put the splits side by side, you know, you can see the difference. You know, for people that, and it's funny because I brought this up going in last week, you know, about the challenges of explaining, you know, let's say, you know, Medina Spirit getting beat, and it absolutely was a textbook case where you look at what the splits were in the Derby, you look at the splits here, and it's easy to understand that, you know, the two were vulnerable, both Midnight Bourbon and Medina Spirit were going to be vulnerable to a closer. The biggest concern, and it absolutely affected at least the way I was thinking about the race for Saturday, Rich, and I don't know how much you got to watch on, you know, you're obviously on TV doing the Fox show. But the racetrack was, you know, the inside was tremendous, was golden. And, you know, even into Saturday, it did seem to be a little bit, you know, a little fairer as the day was unfolding on Saturday. But boy, it was a biased racetrack, certainly on Friday and a little bit into Saturday.
But, even Ron Bauer having to come off the rail when he did, he saved an immense amount of ground, you know, all the way around there, you know, before he tipped out. I mean, like, that's the classic Pimlico trip, right? I mean, you know, let's forget Preakness and Black Eyed Susan and Pimlico Special Big Races. But on a daily basis, if you pay attention to Pimlico over the years, you're not the guy chasing three wide around a turn that wins. It's not conducive to that kind of trip. I mean, you have to be much the best. You know, if you're going to come out around horses, save ground, be patient, disciplined, stay, and then, you know, tip out as you turn for home. So, you know, it's not surprising that Pimlico would play that way. It obviously was a very clipped surface. You know, as Belmont's been very, very fast. I mean, we're seeing, you know, $25,000 maidens going a mile, run 45 and change, and continue. So, you know, there's a lot of life, you know, in Belmont Park right now, just like it was at Pimlico, you know, from what I was paying attention last week into the Preakness.
Walk a little bit through the way the rest of the field unfolded. It did seem like, you know, there were some horses that we anticipated, you know, big efforts. You already talked about Concert Tour, but, you know, the Chad's two runners, it didn't really impact, you know, that probably was the other, you know, sidebar among the prime contenders.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I know some people liked both of Chad's runners, and the fact that Chad would send them there, you know, you had to respect that because he's not going there for crab cakes, right? So, but I got to be honest with you, and this is a little hard for me to say because you know how much I love New York racing and how, you know, I mean, my whole life has been New York racing. I kind of question just how good the three-year-olds were here through the winter in through our series. And, you know, the big effort in the Gotham, won a charge. And I just, the overall strength of those races, I think, has to be questioned, particularly what the horses have done out of it. Listen, they're nice horses. I'm not meaning to knock them, but it's another level. You know, when we talk about these prep races, when you actually get to the classics, it's just ramped up. It's another level, and you have to improve off of those prep races. That's why they're important races in their own right, but they are prep races. And I just didn't see anybody out of New York that I went like, wow, this is a horse, you know, going forward at the right time or taking a big step forward. I think they're nice horses, but I think they're second-tier horses. I don't think they're, you know, true classic kind of horses. So was I surprised they didn't run well? Not really. But again, you know, it's the fact that Chad sent them there, you always have to respect that.
Yeah, and it was tough to discern. He had mentioned that, you know, that he thought that risk taking was going to be particularly comfortable with, you know, with the mile and 3/16. He wasn't as convinced about, you know, the trip as much when it came to crowded trade, but you know, there was that parallel to cloud computing that just, you know, that felt so compelling.
Well, don't you think that's what we humans do? We see something that has a similar look or a similar feel, and then we kind of create it, I think, more in our minds. I know I do it. I'll see, like, wow, this reminds me of this colt that I saw run, and he should, you know. And they're all individuals. I think it's unfair to put that on the horses, right? What does Wayne Lucas say? You know, people have opinions. Horses have the answers, right? So I do think we all tend to do that. We see something that is familiar, and we're expecting it to go, you know, that same way, where I think cloud computing is like a whole different level than the horses we're talking about.
Well, and then I suppose we should mention Keep Me in Mind, who, you know, put in a rally. He's what he is, and he, you know, he's got that way of breaking slowly and, you know, leaving himself with a lot to do. He put in a nice enough run, and, you know, part of the superfecta.
But you know what'll happen now? People start talking about him like a Belmont horse, and
no.
You know that isn't how the Belmonts won.
No, don't do that. Don't get caught in that black hole.
No, I mean, I'm just saying, like I love when people say that you know, oh well, this horse he'll love the mile and a half. That doesn't necessarily play true, right? I mean, it's the same thing. You get a really great closing sprinter, and people think, wow, man, when he goes further, but they don't have the same kind of kick. And the Belmont is the test of a champion because it's about stamina. It's about a horse that can stay. It's not about who's, you know, can close or have a turn of foot. It's about who can doggedly maintain and stay on.
Well, and the difference, you know, because people are going to say, well, why is Keep Me in Mind that different from a Rombauer? And it, you know, Rombauer has shown, you know, the ability to, you know, to have some tactical speed, and certainly, obviously, now in Pratt's hands, you know, you think of Pratt as being so, you know, so efficient on the turf, you know, that's kind of a turf rider mentality in a dirt horse, you know, being, you know, use his positional speed appropriately, and that, you know, that should play well. I mean, it does look like, you know, you're going to end up with a sizable Belmont field. Right now we're working, you know, with about 12 names, and it depends on Todd. I mean, right now I think there's six that that have Todd's name next to them that are potential participants. But there is a difference between a Rombauer and a Keep Me in Mind.
Well, Rombauer is much handier. I mean, even though, you know, he's not, you know, a speed type horse, he's handy. He, you know, again, I'll ask people, watch the race several times and really, you know, you got to clue in. You got to focus in on individual horses to really get a feel for the horse, their trip, you know, their strengths and weaknesses. Like, you know, if you watch a race two or three times and it's a 10 or 12 horse field, you're not picking up the nuances. You're like truly, like when I do my homework for the Fox shows, America's Day at the Races, we watch endless amount of replays because you miss so much if you're just watching the whole race. You have to make a concerted effort of, okay, I'm studying Ron Bauer this trip and then watch the replay with just him. I'm going to watch, you know, keep me in mind and just watch him. That's how you really can break down a race. It's time consuming, but you learn so much. And, you know, keep me in mind, to me, he's not handy. He has his gait issues, whether it's because he's weak behind or, you know, so he can't push off the same way. You know, horses propel themselves. They don't pull themselves. They don't drag themselves along. They push with their hind end. That's why we talk about a horse being weak behind. You'll see those horses have a tendency to break a little bit slow or not be as handy, not be able to stop and start. You know, average horses have one run in them.
Right.
And, right, the better the horse, the longer that run is. The cheaper the horse, the shorter that run is. Now, your really good horses have the ability to make two moves or stop and start at least once within the running of a race. Your great horses are horses that can continually stop and start. They're ballet dancers. They can get in a spot and idle and wait for the rider again and then move again a second time. So, you know, I've always contended the Derby's won by a horse that can make a long, sustained run or a horse that has the ability to make distinct runs, two, maybe even three distinct moves within a race. Those are the, you know, the horses that can win those kind of races because they're so, you know, big fields, very good horses, so competitive. And then, of course, you know, you have your freaks of the world, like a Seattle Slough who can break slow, bull his way through a field, and just keep running the entire mile and a quarter. That's very rare, very unusual. But, you know, like when I look at Ron Bauer, and again, having watched this race as many times as I have already, and I'll continue to watch it, I see a horse that's got multiple moves in him. He's got the ability to get to a spot and hang out and wait and then do it again, and that's formidable. You know, he got a good buyer figure. I go back to, I think after we talk about all this and Medina's Spirit and as well as Midnight Bourbon and everything, Ron Bauer is for real. His race is a true race. It's not like some fluke that it was just because they went quicker on the front end. He ran, and he created his own trip, and I think that's important to, you know, really understand. He created his trip.
Yeah, and was just ridden, you know, ridden to a T and prepared, you know, just perfectly. So it all came together. Wins off by 3.5, and really won as he pleased. I saw that, you know, Marty McGee made an interesting little note that 2 years in a row, 11-1 and change winners with Skydiver last year. She was 11.70-1 and Ron Bauer 11.80-1.
Which is interesting.
Yeah. It caught my eye.
You know, it's funny because I was having a good day Saturday and that race kind of blew me up. I mean, I still had a good day. My Nyra Betts account was firing on all cylinders. But,
look at you.
I did not see Ron Bauer coming, but, you know, going back and looking through it, I just came away with the distinct impression that this is a really nice colt, that this was his coming out party. You know, obviously Michael McCarthy knew all along that he had a colt that belonged. I found it interesting. How many times are you going to hear in your life where the owner had to talk to the trainer at a run in the Kentucky Derby?
No doubt. And we're looking forward. I will get John Fradkin on this week, and he'll talk about, you know, the approach. And, you know, even if he had run an A race in the Derby, the way that race unfolded and the way the, you know, certainly the splits were, it wouldn't figure that, you know, that it might have been, you know, for naught. It just feels like This was a very well orchestrated in every respect, and I'm looking forward to, actually Sid will talk to us on Wednesday about Twirling Candy, and you know, this unraced mare Cashmere by Cowboy Cal. I brought up Cowboy Cal with Michael because of course he was there when Cowboy Cal campaigned in the Todd Bletcher barn So there's some really nice elements to, you know, what went on here. You know, homebred and you know, smallish operation with just a couple of brood mares, and it very, very, as I started this morning, you know, very satisfying, especially under the backdrop we were dealing with, that you know, just was, it was a tortured week, Rich.
It, you know what, it really was. And this, you know, feels like everything good about the game. You know, we've been in the game a long time. We've seen the best of it. We've seen the worst of it. You know, I remember being a kid working at a farm on Long Island, and the man that I worked for, Mr. Niles, it was big show farm, but they also had coaching horses. They would do coaching competitions. And I was still working on the coaching side of the barn and of the farm. And Mr. Niles, maybe the best horseman I've ever been around in my life, could tell more about a horse's soundness backing him into a harness than most people can, having him jog up and down the road. And he was in his 80s. And he was so excited about the Ruffian Foolish Pleasure Match Race. Mm. And then, of course, you know, tragedy. And, you know, I was about 10, and I went to the barn the next morning not fully understanding the gravity of it. You know, like, I mean, I was sad, it was bad, but I didn't fully get it. Like, I, you know, you're just a kid, and maybe you just don't have a full comprehension of that stuff. But I went to the barn, and Mr. Niles was there by himself, and he had already sent everybody else home and told me to go home. And meanwhile, we had, like, 12 draft horses, and this is an 80-some-odd-year-old man, and he said, no, I need to be alone with my horses, because he was grieving so hard about Ruffian. And I remember, like, it's such a memory that stands out to me. So when I talk about the best of it, the worst of it, you know, that was absolutely the worst of it. You know, Dennis Bryda had taken me and my friend David Figueroa, he and his wife Julia, to see Ruffian when she won the Astoria. You know, so we got to see her compete as a two-year-old. And so, you know, what happened over the last few weeks is tough because we love the game and we have such a respect and reverence for the game. And, you know, when you feel like the game is hurt or disrespected or diminished in people's eyes that are less informed, it's hard. It's tough. It's tough to swallow, because then people don't want to open their eyes, open their ears, open their heart to, you know, what really takes place, what really goes on, and how much good there is and how much people care and love not only the game but the horses. And, you know, and it feels like we were getting run into brick walls the last 2 weeks since the Derby over all of this stuff, you know, with no commentary on what took place or the facts of the case. Not my place to say that. I'm just saying, as a person who loves and respects the game and the horses so much, it's just been a difficult 2 weeks. You know, my phone blowing up with people wanting explanations, but then not really wanting, you know, to hear about the game and what it is. So, you know, they're getting one representation of it. Well, in 2 weeks' time, here's, you know, when we talk about the best and the worst of it, here's the best of it. Here is, you know, a little horse that comes from a small breeding operation, even the story about how they got the mare and everything that transpired to this, you know, for this horse to win the Preakness, and his trainer, who is a hardworking, deserving, you know, salt of the earth kind of guy that I saw work his way up the ranks through Todd Pletcher's barn, and his raw emotion after the race and how much it meant. And honestly, heartbreaking too, that he was so, you know, obviously upset that his wife and daughter weren't there to share the moment with him. But, you know, this is what is beautiful about the game. This is what everything good about the game. And somehow we have to get this message out there better and before bad things happen, be more proactive, less reactive, because people need to see really how beautiful this game is. And it is. No one will ever be able to tell me it's not. Yes, there's good and bad, and there's bad in every walk of life and every industry. It's never going to be perfect, but it's incumbent upon us. It's our responsibility to make it the best it can be and represent it the best we can.
Yeah, I well said, and that'll be, you know, really well received and appreciated, Rich. I try to distill it exactly those sentiments. I try to distill it into saying being a good steward. That's it. That's, yeah, you know, incumbent on everybody. Rich, before before we wrap, haven't had a chance. I haven't even watched The Soaring Softly yet. So give us a quick summary of what went on with the Clement winner of the Soaring Softly Saturday.
No, she was good. She was very good. I thought, you know, she didn't have a great trip. She was kind of hung 3-4 wide throughout, was a little bit keen. Not a very big filly at all either. I mean, really diminutive. But I think she was very good. I question how far ultimately at the end of the day she'll go. Maybe she'll top out at a mile, which is fine if she's a good miler. But it seemed like the 7/8 really, you know, suited her well. And, you know, one thing I've been noticing, and I think people that like are playing and wagering, all of the Clement horses that spend the winter in Payson, you got to pay attention to all of them. It's a wonderful place to train horses. It's a little bit of a deeper surface, not as deep as it used to be, but still, you know, more demanding. And horses come out of there running, you know, whether it's Mott, whether it's Clement, but I see it particularly with the Clement horses. You know, if you look back, you know, 2 or 3 works back and they had a steady, supply of works from Payson Park, they are horses to pay attention to. And they all look great. And we saw, you know, the year that Christoph had last year, particularly in the summer. And now he's got, to me, his secret weapon, Miguel Clement. You know, up in Saratoga, you know, I think it's an incredible story. And, you know, have his son as, you know, one of his main assistants, and how well those horses are running out of the barn that Miguel's overseeing. And, you know, for me, I watched Miguel grow up. He grew up with my son Joey. They've been friends since they're little, you know, 7, 8 years old. They've been running around together talking about horses and racing, and, you know, and now they're both well on their way to accomplishing things in this game. And again, we talk about the best of it, the worst of it. To me, that's the best of it. I'm so proud of Miguel and what he's doing, and, you know, becoming a right-hand man to his father, who is one of, you know, the best horsemen that you're ever going to meet. You know, his horses are impeccably cared for and look fantastic, and they are running, you know, out of their shoes.
Yeah, the Clements are firing, and this was actually a nice value too. Went off at over 8-1. Paid $19. And Toby's Art 3-2, and not even in the super. So this thing.
And the owner was there by the winner's circle, and to see that woman's excitement and her happiness,
nice.
and even talking about how small she is, but what a big heart she has. I mean, you know what? What was that line in Seabiscuit? Although he be small,
right,
he be mighty, or something like that. Well,
right. Otherwise, Rich, Mike Maker is going to join us next. We already had Michael McCarthy. Anything else from the weekend that we should be aware of we missed?
Nothing that really jumps to mind. I'll be honest with you, I stayed down the whole week because I was done late every day. And I was just so happy to get home last night because, you know, 3 nights away from the farm,
sure,
I started having withdrawal. And then Gabby got home yesterday from Florida.
Oh, nice.
Working with horses. Yeah, so we, you know, I was actually home by 6 o'clock, and, you know, we made dinner and just catching up with her and hearing all her horse experiences and adventures over the winter. But I'm so happy she's home. And now, a couple weeks from now, Joseph's wedding. So, you know, a lot going on.
A lot going on, and we're 3 weeks to Belmont. The Belmont Racing Festival. So, Rich, I appreciate it. Great to catch up, and we'll talk next week.
Steve, look forward to it. Have a great day.
Rich Migliori, everybody. We'll stay right here, and got about 20 minutes to the top of the hour. And, in fact, at 11, you've got the start of the Mid-Atlantic Sale, Timonium. And I think Mike Maker has got his eye on a few. He joins us now after a spectacular weekend. 2 stake wins on Friday, including the Black Eyed Susan, 2 on Saturday. Mike, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You know, on Friday, let's start with the big feature, and, you know, always pleased for the Wyckoff family and team and Army wife. To me, she looked like a beach ball, Mike, coming out of the Gazelle. Everybody's running out of that race. Talk about getting her ready and winning the Black Eyed Susan.
That was great. It was a Philly that we were had high expectations on from day one, and you know, finally get a stakes win for it was very gratifying. And like you said, especially for the Three Diamonds Farm family, very special.
You know, when you drew inside and with her style, and you know, knowing that there were speeds, talk a little bit about the way the racetrack had played leading up, and if it adjusted your thinking or just left it in Joelle's hands to, you know, try to stay close for the rally.
Plan was to try to stay close. You know, the way the track seemed, looked like the rail was a good spot, so really wasn't concerned. You know, and like you said, the way the horse came out of the Gazelle were running, the trouble she had, and the Gazelle, and got shuffled back and re-rallied late. You know, we had a feeling pretty confident going into the race.
You know, talk a little bit about her development, because she's one of these horses that it took a while for her to break her maiden. It took four tries, you know, some 60-ish, 50-ish buyers, and doesn't seem like, you know, you panicked. It did seem like you kind of played around a little bit. Declaration of war out of an arch mare, and so she started on the turf. Talk about, you know, her development.
You know, she's a bigger, heavier horse, so took a while for her to come around, but her pedigree leaned towards grass, so that's where we started her. And, you know, we always felt, you know, there was more to give, which turned out we were right. But, you know, once she stretched out, you know, the rest is history.
The declaration of war mare and or daughter, and out of the arch mare, Tread. This was J.D. Stewart and Partners, $190,000 as an OBS April purchase. What was that backstory? Who was on hand to pick her out?
It was a Three Diamonds horse that he was planning on pinhooking. You know, we had watched her trained, and he bought her back out of the sale.
How
he
about that?
Partners on the horse and. Bought him out at sale.
Huh. Excellent. Excellent. Well, we may have to get Kirk in, and this was, you know, this was part obviously of just this this assault on the weekend at Pimlico. What do you envision next for her?
Still need to get through the sale, and we'll talk more about it after the sale. But enjoy this for as long as we can.
Well, and much like the Preakness winner, I mean, once Army Wife, you know, got to the leaders, Lady Traveler and Willful Woman for the Leblancs, she just powered away and coasted under the wire to win the Black Eyed Susan, and it was a Maker Barn double, because of course right ahead of it you win the Pimlico Special with Last Judgment. And honestly, Mike, he looked like a winner. I mean, every step.
Yes. Yeah, great claim by Michael Dubb. You know, we picked him out, you know, with Florida Bred Stakes in mind, and he'd win the Sunshine Million. Ran so well, stretched out, we left him there. And won the Challenger at Tampa Bay. You know, had a rough go at it, the Pegasus, but I think it was tough to chase next go, and, you know, had a nice, comfortable lead and was able to get the job done.
You know, for owners who are in that awkward position, Mike, when they're going to run, you know, essentially a potential stake horse or a stake horse that, you know, is right on the edge, or, you know, an allowance winner. The, when you're running for 62.5 and 75,000 and 80,000, ask yourself repeatedly, is Maker and one of his clients going to claim this horse? That should be what people say to themselves. Right? Nobody does this like you do, Mike. You and whether it's Michael Way or the Wyckoffs, or in this case, Mike Dubb and his partners, you guys, You must review every high-level claiming race out there at the major circuit.
That is correct.
Well, and you and I have talked about it. I've discussed it with Michael Way as well, and it's obviously a good formula. What about the mile and 3/16 portion of it, to get him out in that kind of a distance?
Well, the way I look at it, the further they go, the softer the pace should be, so yep. I thought that played in his favor.
Well, it was interesting. I don't know if people picked up on it, but, you also sent Treasure Trove. And for those that aren't aware, that's the brother of Rombauer. So I thought that was an interesting little sidebar from the weekend that I don't know if everybody noticed that.
Yes, the breeders came by to visit Treasure Trove.
Oh, nice.
They were just on the other side of the barn, too, so very happy for them.
I love it. And he was a $40,000 claim, and he's cashed some checks. I mean, you've tried him in different spots, including the Alan Jerkins Marathon and Temperance Hill. I mean, it feels like you're still tinkering with him.
A little bit. We had him a little closer, and he probably likes to be on Saturday as well, and it didn't work out. But he ran a great race in the Ben Ali and had a bit of a wide trip that might have cost him the win, but won a lot of distance between first and last. Unfortunately, we were last.
Well, this is, again, it fits that whole profile of the barn and one of the, not that you don't get nice horses that you get to start out as youngsters, but you've really made hay with these kind. Let's talk about one that you've had from the start, Some Like It Hot Brown, and you had to be happy watching the way the turf was going in on Saturday. It felt like, if somebody got the pace to control, they were going to be tough up front. Mean Mary kind of set the template in the Gallerette.
Yeah, that was correct. The Maker's Mark, he was part of a very strong pace and didn't work out. But, Flying Scotsman, when he came to his outside the Maker's Mark, he kind of got aggressive, ran himself into the ground, and this time Jose did a great job getting him to the outside and settled nicely and finished up a lot better.
He's funny because you mentioned the Maker's Mark, which, that's a tough place to come back and make a seasonal debut.
Yes.
Also, one of the things, Mike, that I think horse players certainly are dealing with is the Lasix question. And he, ran in the Maker's Mark without it for the first time in his career. And when you look at this and then knowing that he was going to be without it again here, players are having to make this determination. What's your feeling so far as we deal with this reality? How are you approaching it, with your horses, and give everybody a feel?
Oh, to be honest, it's more confusing than ever. Some of the horses that came off it due to, Zulu Alpha is an example, didn't run out of the Pegasus and ran huge, so after the race, you're like, you keep them off Lasix, run them, or, you feel stupid if they bleed and you were able to use it and didn't use it, et cetera, et cetera. And, mm-hmm. The issue first came up, I was a bit hesitant, but I'm not so sure, just take it all away. I feel the horses are running equal to their ability with or without it.
Is there anything, I can remember when this whole issue started to manifest itself going back, 6, 7, 8 years maybe. And I remember asking Tom Proctor, I said, what if Lasix goes away, what you know, he certainly, with his background, you know, had, you know, pre-Lasix experience, and you know, given his father and his, you know, and his uncles, and you know, the different, you can call them home remedies, or, you know, homeopathic things that you can do. And, you know, from your, you know, from your background as well, what, you know, are there some, you know, some aces in the hole that, you know, you can rely on to try to, you know, make it easier on the horses if you're worried that they might bleed?
You know, there's all kinds of things out there, and, you know, obviously it works on some, doesn't work on others. So, yeah, there's different treatments that we do use. You know, when I was a kid, I grew up in Detroit, so a lot of, in Canada, Lasix wasn't allowed. So a lot of the bleeders up there, they would sell privately, and they would buy them privately and bring them to Detroit, and you'd think, oh, Lasix the answer, or was it the competition, or was it the above? So it had some experience with that as well.
Well, we're gonna continue to deal with it, and for some, like at Hot Brown, you know, he's a 5-year-old now. This is another nice addition to his, you know, to his resume. What kind of opportunities do you see stretching out from here?
There again, need to get with connections after the sale, but he's a New York bred, so obviously some of the New York bred stakes, so. His bill, he likes Saratoga, so I'm sure he'll be back for the Bernard Baruch.
Nice. That's right. That's right. He won the Bernard Baruch last summer.
Yep.
That's right. So you can shoot for that. In fact, he ran second in the dinner party last year after the summer.
That's right.
He's pretty funny, right? When you look at that. But, you know, he's... In a Big Brown, for Big Brown, he's got to be, you know, he's one of Big Brown's, you know, big success stories, and one of his best progeny.
Yes.
Well, part of I saw Nasha Thompson was tweeting about the New York Breds, and so did Dave Grenick after some like at Hot Brown's win. So he adds to his resume. And then another claim story, Paradise Farms and David Staudeker with Special Reserve. So kind of nice. You spread the wins around with your clients over the weekend.
Yes, worked out well.
Right?
Yeah.
Special Reserve wins that Maryland Sprint. And this was, I thought this was a very difficult race to handicap. I you know, ended up, you know, the two favorites run 1-2. Strike Power went off favored. But, you know, Special Reserve, when Arad took over, you could tell he wasn't going to be beaten.
Yeah, no, there again, he broke so sharp, and Arad had a great position off Strike Power, and, felt very confident going down the backside, and just a really nice horse, and I think he's only getting better.
Well, triple-digit fig in here,
yeah.
The 100 buyer for him, and I'm not sure, is that a career best, right? Yeah, career best, first triple-digit buyer. He's a midshipman gelding, so really you can have some fun, and there's... You know, just looking, Michael, there's not a lot of, you know, that's his 19th start as a 5-year-old. There's not a lot of mileage on him.
No, I agree. Yep.
He's also won turf sprinting a couple of times. So you guys are going to have some fun with him.
Yes, for sure.
Who picked him out in February?
Peter Prosher at Paradise Farm.
Sure.
He's a big Regs and Cheat fan, and he had a good number. Liked him at Oakland. They had him in for 40, but granted, he won that day, but he was still eligible for the two other than again, and that was the main reason we claimed him. The purses were very high at Oakland, so figured he fit well in the two other than and get the investment back, which worked out well.
And darn right. Special reserve, and he and some like it hot brown close out a four-stake weekend. Is that about as you've had plenty of big days, and we've talked after, you know, multiple stake win days. I can't remember talking after winning four in 2 days.
No, it's been a while.
Have you ever, is it the best, you know, in terms of opportunities, is that the best 2 days that you've had for, you know, for targets?
Well, there was one day, it's been a while, when Hanson was actually a two-year-old. I think it won four stakes that day in one day. I think it won the Ontario Derby. Hanson won the Kentucky Cup Juvenile.
Right.
Grand Bela Dora won the Distaff, and then Matthewsburg won the Sprints. There was four in a day, but it still didn't tally up to the first earnings that we had in a few days.
Well, pretty good. And when you can make four sets of connections happy like this, it's particularly successful. And before I send you off into the sale, I want to ask you about later today at Indiana Actuality, the Indiana bred making a second start.
Yes, benefit from the first race, 5.5 isn't in the distance, so we should get a good, lot better showing going two turns today.
You know, I'm glad to see Tom Conway on the ownership line there. I haven't seen the Conways much of late.
Yes, I have two horses for him, and another one's Empire Maker, a big immature horse that should get started here in about a month.
Excellent. Well, today in the opener at Indiana Grand, as racing starts this week, Actuality, Jose Batista aboard, and you've got a bunch of Churchill this week and Belmont, more at Indiana, and obviously, Mike, about as nice a glow off of a weekend as you could have. What about that Lay a Man first-time starter this week for Paradise as well, Barese?
Yeah, we bought him from Beck Thomas and at Gulfstream, and very, very high hopes for him.
This is a two-year-old. How many two-year-olds have you run so far?
Be my first one.
That's why I mentioned it. So the two-year-old season gets started, and this is New York-bred two-year-olds. And speaking of which, I'm sure you saw some New York-breds the last few days at Timonium. It feels like this is going to be a good sale.
Yes, sure does.
Well, I'll let you get ready. And the first one through the ring, in fact, I'll remind people, is Blues. Leon Blushewitz's filly goes through the ring first. Mike, congratulations. Just tremendous. And we'll probably see you at Belmont.
Okay. Thank you.
Mike Maker, everybody. And I knew he had had another day kind of similar to these two. So there you go, back to Hanson. Wow. But this was, you know, the Army Wife and Last Judgment, I was all over. And I guess I should have thought more about, you know, about how he was going into Saturday. And, well, I just didn't, the Maryland Sprint, I was, I think I ran like 8th, 9th, 10th, 12th. I mean, I just, that one was a mystery to me. Something like a Hot Brown, I thought, you know, had every, you know, for the, in terms of the pace, I thought, all right, you gotta respect them in here, in the dinner party. So, tremendous weekend. Let's do this, take our last break of the morning. We'll come back. Jay Privman is going to join us to kick off hour three as we recap the Preakness weekend down in Baltimore. Really, just it was two perfect days. Really nice. We'll get Jay's impression. If you didn't see Jay's analysis, the post, the wrap-up. And I know how happy he was for... he's known Michael McCarthy for many, many years. And I imagine he was just thrilled for Michael. Let's step away. We'll get Graham Motion in later, too. Graham is on his way to the sale, and I'll pull up the feed. You can watch the sale, of course, DRF, Blood Horse, or PhasicTipton.com. And we'll see how Blues Philly does first through the ring. Back after this. Jay Privman, DRF Privman. Joins us.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 38-4643.
Sirius XM Sports.